Really short.
Regular 9:15. So you guys are doing the second paragraph position or the first paragraph?
The second paragraph.
Oh, second paragraph, okay.
Is there any use to keep up to date with whatever the yeshiva is learning?
In a very approximate sense, I'm not doing it line by line, but just
Does
the
Rebbe give any sort of
marsh? So I actually do. I do. Once a week, I give to the Beis Medrash on what they're learning in Bekiyas. I give them in Thursday night. This will be the third parak.
They don't usually they learn different prakim for.
Yeah, for Bekiyas, it's the third parak. And so I'm with this. And then sporadically to the Kailo. Like the Kailo is doing something totally different. They're doing Yavamas.
Interesting. Okay.
So I step in for the Kobo sometimes.
You have some leftover gauges to have out of the
other,
maybe?
Leftover. Wouldn't be here. I would go to the dining room. Would be the best place. The best place to go is the dining room.
Where is the.
I'll give them directions. It's complicated.
We'll have to advertise more to the center group. I don't think ever. There's so many new people, they don't necessarily know that this. Right. MS is the group now.
Yeah. Okay, well, quality more than quantity.
That is
true.
We have the quality.
But I come for the hot tea, actually.
Okay. Thank you. Bigger cups now.
I appreciate it. Nice cup. Nice size.
Thank you.
Start a little bit. So what's interesting is actually this is a part of the Tanya in which almost every week is going to be a totally different topic. So in a way, if you miss a shiur, it's not going to be the same problem. And again, let me just review a little bit what is going on. The Tanya, which is not really the name of the book anyway, but it's called Likutei Amarim, the book Anthology of Statements, is a book that has presently five parts. The largest part, which has 52 prakim, is called Sefer Shel Beinonim, the book of the middle of the rotors. The second part, which is much shorter, is called Shar HaYichud V'Emunah, the gateway of God's unity and God's faith in God. The third, which we just finished before the end of Zman, is called Igeres HaTshuva, the letter of Tshuva. Now, let me point out that when Rav Shneur Zalman printed the Tanya, when he was still alive, the first printing only had part 1 and 2. It had Sefer Shel Beinonim and Shar HaYichud V'Emunah, only two of the five. And the Baal HaTanya was also Mesupik, which should be the order. Because again, just to remind you, Sefer Shel Beinonim, well, it's a very complex book in many ways, but Sefer Shel Beinonim is designed to remind us that we, most people, are not tzaddikim. Tzaddikim are people who have destroyed the Yetzer Hara. And most people are not going to destroy the Yetzer Hara. There's still going to be that Yetzer Hara. But you can still be a very righteous and holy person by your struggles. Remember, the goal here was to give chizuk to people who said, I've been serving Hashem for all of my life, and I'm still struggling. The Baal HaTanya's answer is, that's your purpose. That's your tachlis. Look at the struggles as challenges. And Sefer Shel Beinonim deals with many, many things. It deals with the respective role of Maisa versus Kavana. And this was a very hot issue because many Hasidim, other than the Balatanya, we're emphasizing Kavana as the most important thing. And if that meant you miss Siman Kriyashma, so what? The Iker is Kavana, the Iker is the Vegas. Then you have the Nefesh HaChaim, which represents the Litvasha position. No, 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 the Iker is the Halacha L'maisa. And the Balatanya tries to be in the middle. That's why the Balatanya, the Tanya, was a controversial work, both among Hasidim and among Misnagdim. See, we're familiar with the Machloksim of Misnagdim against Hasidim. We're less familiar about Machloksim within the Hasidic world. Many, many, many Hasidim, and many Rebbes, and many other Talmidim of the Mezirich or Magid looked very askance at the Tanya's Derech. Because what the Tanya did was, he talks about a lot about Kavana, and he quotes the Zohar very often, that Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem are the wings that bring your mitzvahs to Shemayim. But at the same time, he makes the point, yeah, they're the wings, but they're not the body of the bird. They get your mitzvahs up to Shemayim, but without the mitzvahs, they don't count. And the Balatanya also emphasized learning, the importance of learning. The Balatanya, we have to remember, was a great, great, great guy. And I've mentioned it, I mean, you know this already, and I've mentioned it before, that he wrote a version of the Shulchan Aruch that's called Shulchan Aruch Harav, or Shulchan Aruch Hagraz, Hagon Rav Zalman. Now, when Chabad says Shulchan Aruch, they actually mean that. When we say Shulchan Aruch, we mean Rav Yosef Karo, but we do refer to Shulchan Aruch Harav. Now, the thing to remember is, Shulchan Aruch Harav is not only a Chabad book. Shulchan Aruch Harav is one of the major, major poskim. The Mishnah Berura brings the Shulchan Aruch Harav all the time. We don't always poskim like him, but he's always a makor in halacha. And I think I had mentioned to you before as well that there's another benefit to Shulchan Aruch Harav, even when we don't poskim like him. He's extraordinarily clear and organized in the way he explains halacha. So let's say you're learning some area of halacha in Mishnah Berurah, whatever, you don't understand the general concepts of what it is. This would be one of the, I bet no, very few people do this, but this would be one of the svarim to look at. Again, not so much because we paskin like his bottom line, we don't always do that, but he's masbir, what is d'oraisa, what is drabanan, etc. Beautiful, beautiful hasbara. So the Balatanya was kind of rare among Hasidic Rebbes, that he was actually a tremendous, tremendous guy in the Talmud Chacham. So in Sefer Shel Beinonim, it's like the Kusker Rebbe said, when you walk in the middle of the road, you get hit with traffic on both sides. The Balatanya emphasizes the importance of Kavana, but the importance of Maisa, and the importance of Halacha, but the importance of Dveikas, the importance of learning. He's trying to bring all of these things in and trying to fit them together and give chizuk to people that even though they're struggling, that is their tachlis in life. Their tachlis in life is the struggle. That's Sefer Shel Beinonim. The Shara Yichud V'Yamuna is his explanation of the nature that everything is God. That the pasuk, when the pasuk says, Ein od milvado, it doesn't just mean there is no God besides God. It actually means there is no anything besides God. And that actually is a fairly controversial idea because that really is an interpretation of the Ari's concept of Tzimtzum. The Arizal had explained, right, he had started off with a very simple question. If God is everywhere, then how can I exist? How can two objects exist in the same place? So the Arizal said, in order for creation to be enabled, Hashem had to shrink. Hashem had to contract into himself, making a makam panoi, making an empty vacuum or an empty space, and was able to then create within that empty space. Now, the Balatanya says that's impossible. Number one, God is not a physical entity that can somehow shrink. And number two, if you were to say that God withdrew from a certain place and then created in that space, then you're saying there is a place where there is no God. And therefore the Balatanya, the Arichus, I'm not going to chazer over everything in Shariach and V'Yamuna, basically says that symptom is only a mashal, that from the way we look at it, it's as if Hashem is not here, that's called Hester Panim, a certain level of concealment, but God is in everything. Now here already, this was a major controversy. The Vilna Gaon felt that if God is everywhere, then God is in the bathroom, and then God is in the stones, and God is in the trees. He says that becomes Avodah Zarah. The Vilna Gaon actually considered this to be a form of Avodah Zarah. And you may remember that in Shara Yichud V'Yamuna, the Baal HaTanya has very harsh words for people who think they are great and say such a thing. And some understood that this was an attack on the Vilna Gaon. Others say that's absolutely impossible and that he was attacking someone else. But because of that controversy, those words in the Tanya, a whole paragraph about attacking those people who think they're chachamim and Hashem will forgive them for their ignorance, was actually taken out of the printed Tanyas and did not come in till the 1900s, Mamish. A whole part of the Tanya. So that's Shara Yichud V'Yamuna. So, Sefer Shel Beinonim, part one of Tanya, 52 chapters, is really, there's a lot of theoretical Kabbalah in it, but it's essentially a practical guide to how to be an Eved Hashem. How to be an Eved Hashem. Shara Yichud V'Yamuna is a more theoretical understanding of the nature of God and reality. So, the Alter Rebbe was Mesupik, which should come first. There was some evidence that he actually wanted you to learn Shar HaYichud V'Yamuna first, because you have to understand the God that you're worshipping, and then you're told how to worship it. But eventually he decided the other way around. He says, listen, start with practice and then go to theory. I'll first give you Hadracha in Avaida, and then we'll talk about the theoretical structure of Emuna and the like. So, initially, the Alter Rebbe only printed those two sections of the Tanya, Sefer Shel Beinonim and Shara Yichud V'Yamuna. Later, towards the end of his life, he added a third part, which is Igeres HaTshuva, the letter of Tshuva, recognizing the fact that it's very important that a person understands, the Beinoni understands, that when he messes up and makes a mistake, he has to understand the kayach of going back. So there's a certain logical progression in these three halakim. Sefer Shel Beinonim tells you how to serve Hashem. Shara Yichud V'Yamuna is trying to teach you who is Hashem. Tshuva, Igeres HaTshuva, what happens if I mess up? How do I fix it? What do I do? Right, and that's Igeres HaTshuva. Now, in Rav Shneur Zalman's lifetime, those were the only three Chalokim of Tanya that appeared, meaning the first editions of Tanya didn't even have Igeres HaTshuva, and then he added Igeres HaTshuva. To make things a little complicated, Igeres HaTshuva itself was written in two versions, both of which were printed in the Rebbe's lifetime. There was what's called a Madura Kama. There was a first version of Igeres HaTshuva, and then he rewrote it into a second version, which was much more Kabbalistic. There's a reason why he changed it. And in all of the Tanyas up to the present day, we only have the second version. If you go back to things that were printed in the 1790s, you could find the first version. What we have is the second version. The reason why he rewrote the Igeres HaTshuva is because between the first version of Igeres HaTshuva and the second version, there was a pivotal event that occurred in the Alter Rebbe's life, and that was he was imprisoned by the Tsarist government in the notorious Tsarist prison of St. Petersburg, which was the Russian, today that's Leningrad, they call it Petersburg now, right? It was called Leningrad for all the years of the Soviet Union, and then I think they now call it, do they still call it Leningrad? I think they changed it back to Petersburg.
I would imagine they probably changed it back.
Yeah, but whatever, but when I was growing up, it was Leningrad, but in Tsarist times, it was St. Petersburg. And that's where the Tsarist capital was. Moscow was not the capital of Tsarist Russia. And the Alter Rebbe was thrown into prison for various reasons, some connected to the Misnagdim, making accusations against him. And the Rebbe's life was threatened. The Rebbe could have been killed. He could have been exiled to Siberia, which he might not have survived. And lo and behold, when he was redeemed, his day of being free was the 19th of Kislev, and that is why Yud Tes Kislev is called among in Chabad the Rosh Hashanah of Chassidus. They celebrate that as really a great, great liberation day. But you have to understand that the Alter Rebbe saw his imprisonment and his freedom from prison as a deep spiritual idea, because the Alter Rebbe was teaching a Hasidus that was connected to Kabbalah, that was mystical and intellectual as opposed to simply emotional. And there were Hasidim who were against his Shita. I'm talking about big, you know, Gedolim. And there were Misnagdim that were against his Shita. And he saw his imprisonment as really representing a struggle in heaven. Should he be allowed to teach? Should he not be allowed to teach? And he felt when he was imprisoned, it's because in the heavenly court, the side against him was winning. And when he was released, he saw that as a message min hashamayim, that he is now given permission to teach. And those who know the Alter Rebbe's writings very, very clearly say there's a tremendous difference between the way he taught before he was in prison and afterwards, that the teachings after the freedom are much deeper, much more complicated, much more Kabbalistic, because he saw his shichrur, he saw his liberation as a sign from heaven that he should go ahead. So as a result, one of the things he rewrote was the Igeres HaTshuvah, which became a much more Kabbalistic document afterwards. But be it as it may, when the Alter Rebbe died, there were only three Chalakim of Tanya that were published as one book. Collectively, it's all called Likutei Amorim. That's the Rebbe's modesty. He just said it's an anthology of statements as if everything is from other people. But the three Chalakim are the 52 Prakim of Sefer Shel Beinonim, the Shar HaYichud V'Emunah, and the Igeres HaTshuvah. Now, after he died, his sons were looking through his writings, through his things, to see if they could find other assorted writings that were not published. And they found a few things. They found copies of many, many letters that the Rebbe had sent to his Hasidim. And what they did was they took some of these letters, not all of them, in fact there are other volumes of letters of the Alter Rebbe that are not in here, but they took 30, is it 32? Let me see, that gives you a number, the letters are numbered. So in the fourth section of Tanya, which is called Igeres HaKodesh, the Holy Letter, there are actually 32 letters that the Rebbe wrote over a period of time. And the sons took these 32 letters. They removed personal information. So you almost, except for one or two letters, you don't know who this was sent to. Because some of them were public letters to all the Hasidim, some of them were letters to particular people. But all of the identifying information is usually taken out. Personal things are taken out. But 32 letters are published. And this is section of Tanya is called Igeres HaKodesh. Actually, the Babaji Rebbe pointed out, why is it called Igeres HaKodesh? Igeres HaKodesh means the holy letter. This is not a single letter. These are 32 different letters that could have been written over 30 years. So the Rebbe's teretz, which himself, he says, is very, very dochak, is that the printers called it Igeres HaKodesh to be a parallel to Igeres HaTshuva, since the third part of Tanya is called the letter of Tshuva. So they call this part of Tanya the letter of holiness. But in reality, it is not Igeres, it should be a Igros HaKodesh. Okay. But be it as it may, these are 32 letters, and as I indicated, these are not all the letters we have. There are other publications called Michtavei, Balatanya, whatever it is. And the sons included these letters because these letters were considered to be the most relevant to Avodas Hashem generally. In other words, they weren't interested in putting a letter that dealt with somebody's particular problem. Now, these 32 letters are of different varieties and types, meaning some of them are relatively simple letters. Like tonight, I think we look at a relatively simple letter. Other of them are very Kabbalistic, very complicated, as difficult as any other part of the Tanya, if not more so. Some of the letters are very short. Some of the letters are longer. Most of the letters do not identify to whom they were sent. A few letters actually identify a specific person who received the letter and the like. So the Geras HaKodesh is a whole bunch of topics. It's 32 letters. I'm not sure yet if we'll go over every single one. But one thing I want to point out at the outset, that although the Rebbe talks about many, many topics here, the topic he talks about the most, although that's not going to be the letter we're going to look at tonight, is he talks about tzedakah. And here you have to know a little history, that the Alter Rebbe, in spite of the halachas and chazal that you're not supposed to give more than a fifth, the Alter Rebbe more or less ignored that halacha. The Alter Rebbe argued that when you give tzedakah, in fact he says this in the Shulchan Aruch, when you give tzedakah for atonement of averos, the rule of not giving more than 20% doesn't apply, because it's like pikuach nefesh. If I needed a medical operation, otherwise my life is in danger, I certainly would give more than 20%. So if you have sins and you need to get forgiveness of God, of course there's no 20%. You can give 100%. Now, in a way, that almost turns the halacha into irrelevancy, because since everybody has averos, he basically said, forget about chaimish. And you have to know that the Alter Rebbe himself was a great Gabbai Tzedakah. I mean, he collected money for Eretz Yisrael. In fact, one of the charges that got him in prison was that Russia had a long-standing war against Turkey, which was the Ottoman Empire. And who ruled over Palestine in the 18th and 19th century? The Ottoman Empire. So the accusation was that the Alter Rebbe was guilty of treason to the Tsar, because the Alter Rebbe was sending economic support to the Ottoman Empire, which was at war with Russia. That actually was. So the Alter Rebbe raised huge sums of money, and basically he kept on calling on his Hasidim, all of whom were poor, there were no rich Hasidim, to give more and more and more and more and more. And he himself lived in poverty. His own shidduch, when he married into a very, very wealthy family. And his father-in-law was willing, gave him a huge dowry. And the Alter Rebbe took, with the consent of his wife, he took that dowry. He gave it all to tzedakah. Gave it all to tzedakah. And he lived in poverty. So one has to keep in mind, he was not like these Christian millionaires that call on everyone to give them all of their wealth and then live in great wealth. The Alter Rebbe himself lived in extreme poverty, because he gave everything away. And he called on his Hasidim to give everything away. He really was, what do they say? That became a little bit of a tradition in Chabad. Somebody once asked, Satmar Rebbe once said, Satmar Rebbe had a great, great sense of humor. He said, if I were to tell my Hasidim, give all your money to tzedakah, he said, I would not have any Hasidim. Now, if Rav Aaron Cutler would say to all of his Talmidim, give all your money to tzedakah, they would find some way to be makna their nechassim to their wives. Which means, they wouldn't leave Rav Aaron, but they would do a mechanism. Well, stop my money, I can't, it belongs to my wife. They would find some pilpul, right? Says, when the Babaji Rebbe says, give all your money to tzedakah, they would just give all their money to tzedakah. And that was a pattern that was started by the Alter Rebbe himself. So you're going to see over and over and over again, they're like 10 out of the 32 letters, 10 are devoted to tzedakah. Sometimes it's simply talking about what a great mitzvah it is. Other times there are many Kabbalistic reasons why tzedakah has a great importance. So he approaches it on a lot of levels. He approaches it on the basic pshat level, and he approaches it at nishter levels and the like. So tzedakah is the single biggest theme. Now one has to know another thing about the Alter Rebbe. The Alter Rebbe, again, it sounds funny to say this, he was an extremely multi-talented person. Again, it sounds funny to talk about that. Meaning, he was not just a tremendous gain in Torah, and he was not just a tremendous mekubal, and he was not just a tremendous tzaddik, although those are achievements. He was a phenomenal organizer. He organized all through Russia. Minyanim of Hasidim. He didn't have a yeshiva. I mean, his Hasidim were all over the place. But he supervised the Minyanim, the tzedakah collections, determining what they would learn. And again, if you think about this, think about the Lubavitcher Rebbe. I mean, this is kind of a little bit of a Messiah of Chabad. The Chabad Rebbeim were all very, very excellent administrators. Now, these things don't, you know, you could be a great Rosh Hashiva in a great tzaddik. It doesn't follow you know how to administer programs. But the starting with the Alter Rebbe was actually a very, very great administrator, and you're going to see that in these letters, and in those days communication was slow, it wasn't like email or telephone or whatever it was, in these letters he's trying to give guidance and give hadracha to Hasidim that are spread all over Russia and Poland by trying to keep a certain amount of control over them. So one of the interesting things you see in these letters is you get a sense of a little bit of the autobiographical aspect of running a movement. Now, this is the fourth part of the Tanya that's called Igeres HaKodesh. There is a fifth part of the Tanya, which was published at the same time. The fourth and the fifth were published by his sons after death, which is called Kuntres Achron. Kuntres Achron basically means the appendix to the Tanya itself. And this was found in the Alter Rebbe's own copy of the Tanya, that as he wrote the Tanya, particularly Chelek Aleph of the Tanya, the Alter Rebbe himself made notes on Kabbalistic issues, that if, for example, what he said was contradicted by a passage in the Ari, so he wrote notes to himself to reconcile these different passages. So this was actually written in his own Tanya, but he did not print it with the Tanya because maybe he felt it was a more of an advanced thing that people didn't need to know. But the sons printed it as a Kuntres Achron. But it's a little confusing because the end of the Kuntres Achron gets us back to letters. So the Lubavitcher Rebbe basically said there was some printing mistake that happened over here, which means to say the last three or four pages of the Kuntres Achron should not have been printed with part five. They should have been printed in part four. So most of part five is a direct, like, footnotes on parts of the Tanya itself. It even tells you which chapter it refers to. And then the last three or four pages are letters again. So what are the letters doing there? The Rebbe said the letters actually belong in Igeres HaKodesh. Okay? So that's kind of an overview of what the Tanya, the structure of the Tanya, the structure of Likutei Amorim. So now let's just start a letter. Let's look at any particular letter. And we'll start tonight with letter Aleph, first letter. And letter Aleph is a general letter written really to all of his Hasidim. So we'll call this a public letter. This is not a letter to any individual. And he says he wants to thank Hashem for all of Hashem's kindnesses because he has gotten such good news that has revived his soul. And that is that he had made a takana earlier that every minion of his Hasidim, every Chabad minion, must commit that they will finish the whole Shas every year. That doesn't mean each person, but that every minion should be makabel upon themselves that the entire Babylonian Talmud would be finished every year. And the Rebbe had this idea that because we're so united in Achdus and in love, we're like one body, so if our Tzibur finishes Shas, it's Keilu, each and every one of us has finished Shas. And the Rebbe gets news that the Kehilos have been doing this, and he expresses his gratitude that they were mashlim the whole Torah, and he gives a bracha that this should continue to grow in Torah. Again, you see this is very, very interesting. That let me give you a story about the last Lubavitcher Rebbe. You know, Hasidim have a minhag. Number one, if you've ever davened at a Chabad house, you know this, that Shabbos morning they start davening very late, 9:30, 10 o'clock, maybe even later. And they have a minhag that before Shabbos davening, they learn Hasidus, whether it's Tanya or some other work of the Alter Rebbe, the Kutei Torah, or some work of the last Rebbe, Sichas, whatever it would be. So a Chassid once came to Miami to a Chabad house, and he came like 45 minutes before Shacharis was supposed to begin, and he sees Hasidim learning Gemara with a lot of Hislavos. So he saw this as a bad thing. He complained to the Lubavitcher Rebbe. He said to the Rebbe, I came into a shtibel of Hasidim, and they're learning Gemara? What's going on? So Lubavitcher Rebbe just said, I'm so grateful that you give me good news. Thank you for giving me the good news. That's not what the guy intended. The guy intended this as a criticism. And you see this already from the Alter Rebbe. The Alter Rebbe didn't say, learn Hasidus, although he says that elsewhere. He says, Baruch Hashem, every year you make a siyum of Shas. And that's going to be something that should very much continue. And here, he then has a very interesting interpretation of the Pasuk. Friday night, we have Eishes Chayil. Right, we have the song Eishes Chayil. Now, Eishes Chayil is the last perek of Mishle, of Proverbs. And what does Eishes Chayil mean? So there's a Pashat Pshat, and then there are deeper meanings. The Pashat Pshat, which by the way should not be ignored, Chazal say, Ein Mikra Yotze Bidei Pshuta. You don't ignore the simple meaning, is indeed the praise of what a wife does for her husband and her family. That's 100% true. But Kabbalistically, the Eishes Chayil is said to be the Torah itself. The Torah is the beautiful bride. And the Vilna Gaon says that Chayil, a woman of valor, Chayil is begematria 48, because there are 48 characteristics you need to acquire the Torah. That's in Pirkei Avos. So the Torah is a beautiful wife that is acquired in 48 ways. And therefore, every single pasuk is also a reference to the Torah, one way or the other. So, Eishes Chayil is Aleph Beis, right? Every pasuk begins with a letter of the Aleph Beis. So when it comes to Ches, what does it say? Chogra bioz masneha. She girds, she belts her thighs, her loins, with strength, meaning she ties up whatever, her apron, whatever, to do the work. Vatiame tzereloseha. And she gives strength to her arms. So simple meaning is, she has a job to do, she kind of puts on her belt and strengthens herself and does the job. But says the Alter Rebbe, there's a deeper symbolic meaning here. Masnayim. Masnayim are the thighs. The thigh supports the body. The thigh supports the head, meaning the thighs support everything. What is that which supports both my ability to do mitzvos and my ability to connect to Hashem emotionally and mentally? It is emunah. Masnayim is a remez to emunah. When I totally believe that Hashem runs the world, when I believe that the only thing that matters in life is kirvas elokim, that becomes the foundation that will carry me through life. Think about this. In life, there are many difficulties in life. There's suffering. Things don't always go my way. What prevents me from being broken? What stops me from being discouraged? It's my emunah. So the same way the masnayim support the body, emunah supports the Jew. Right? That's the idea. Emunah, 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 the belief that Hashem runs the world. And everything Hashem does is ultimately good, even if I don't understand it. That gives me courage. That gives me resilience. That gives me strength. That gives me the ability to persevere in Aveda, even if I think I'm not succeeding so much, because I have ultimate emunah. Okay? But now let's take it one step further. Right? So it's the thigh, the masnayim is emunah, that support the body. But in order for the thighs to be able, if you're lifting a weight, right, you have to kind of put on a tight belt or something. What gives strength to the masnayim? That's the chagura, that's kind of the belt. Chagra bios. And what is Oz? Oz is Torah. Chazal have a statement, Ein Oz Ela Torah. So Chagra Bi Oz Masnaha means that it is Limud HaTorah itself that will give you the Amuna that will then support you in all of your endeavors. This is an interesting point. He's not saying directly that the Torah will support you. What supports you is Emuna. Emuna is the Masnayim, but Torah is the strength to the Masnayim that will allow the Masnayim to support you. Which means, it's a kind of a new thought here, and that is, Limud HaTorah gives a person Emuna and Bitachon. Now, this is not such a self-evident proposition. I understand if the Torah that I'm learning is Shar Emuno is I'm learning about Shar Chavisal Bavas Shar HaBitachon. Okay, I learn about Bitachon, I get Bitachon. But you're learning Shlichas and Kedushin, or Beya Shenolda Biyamtiv. It has nothing to do with Bitachon Emuna. How does it connect? But the answer, once again, is it's a mystical idea that when I connect myself to God's will, I'm connecting myself to God. And as I connect myself with God and to God, I have a greater sense of His presence. And as I have a greater sense of His presence, then I have greater emuna in Him, because He becomes more real to me. Because Hashem is not a divisible entity. A human being, we can differentiate His will from His essence. God is not divisible. God's will and God's essence are the same. So when I connect to the will, I'm connecting to the essence. And how do I get emuna? By feeling the presence of Hashem in a greater way. And therefore, you see how he's interpreting. Chagra bi'oz masnaha. The Torah girds your thighs with strength. Your thighs are emuna. The oz of Torah gives you emuna. And what are your arms? So here he says arms resemble wings, although we don't fly. Well, we already know from the Zohar that the Alter Rebbe brought many times that love of Hashem and fear of Hashem are the wings that bring your mitzvos up to Shemayim. So, by analogy, arms are like wings. Therefore, the arms are love of Hashem and Yiras Hashem. And that's v'ta'ametz. The Torah gives strength to others. Which means to say, you see what he's saying? He's saying, again, the Alter Rebbe is very, very subtle here. Because some Hasidim took the position that the most important thing in life is love of Hashem and fear of Hashem. And if that's the case, why should I spend my time studying all of these parts of Torah that have nothing to do with Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem? Like, how does any of this bring me closer to God? What is the Alter Rebbe saying? Don't worry about that. Learning Torah is what gives strength to your emunah, and strength to your arms, which are Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem. So therefore, when you learn, in fact, the Nefesh HaChaim said basically the same point, although he didn't use the structure. So this is the beautiful idea. Chagra bi'oz masnaha v'ti'ameh tiroseha, that learning even the chalokim of Torah that are not directly connected at all to spiritual matters strengthen your emunah and give you greater avas Hashem and yiras Hashem, and therefore all the goals you want to accomplish in your avodah you get by limud haTorah. Right? It's a beautiful interpretation. Chagra bi'oz masnaha v'ti'ameh zeroseha. The masnayim is emunah. And the Zroot, the arms, are Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem, which are called the Trei Gadfin. They are called the two wings. Now, he then makes the point that even though, he now moves to topic number two, which is very fascinating, that even though it is limud ha-Torah that puts fuel into your system, it puts the fuel of emuna and the fuel of avas Hashem and yiras Hashem. Just like you have a car, when you fill a gas tank, the car can now run, but you still need to turn on the ignition, to spark it. So he says like this, he says, again, and this is my analogy, but he says that Torah, kav yachol, gives you the fuel, but the thing that ignites the avas Hashem and the yiras Hashem is tefillah. It's tefillah. And therefore you need to put a lot of time into tefillah. And here he writes the following. He says that I am begging you, and this is the second time he says, I am begging you to take time in the amount of time you give to davening. And he's very specific. He says, number one, that the only people who are allowed to daven for the Omer are people that have time to daven slowly. That during the week, people who have to leave early should not be allowed to daven for the Omer. Only people that have time, whether they're teachers or they're being supported by their in-laws. And he says, he insists that a minyan for Shacharis, this is how specific he is, should last approximately an hour and a half. He says, and the only person who is allowed to daven for the Omer is somebody that can stay for at least an hour and a half. And the fact that other people have to leave before then, he says, it's not their fault. If they have to leave, they have to leave. But they have no right to make the rest of the tzibur lose their opportunity to daven b'kabana. This is fascinating. The Alter Rebbe is actually saying that instead of saying, hey, that's not fair, half of us have to leave early because you're davening so slow, the Alter Rebbe says, better to have a minyan that davens slow and people leave early than to make the whole minyan go fast. And he says, if people have to leave early, they're on us. It's circumstances beyond their control. Hashem will forgive them. But they don't have the right to say that everybody should lose their chance to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He then says, on Shabbos and Yom Tov, where even business people are able to stay for a long service, then they should be able to daven as well for the Yom Tov. Okay, this is what he says. And then he says, like this, he says, a little bit of a carrot and a stick here, he says, I'm telling you ahead of time, I will be sending spies to all of the minyanim of my chassidim to see if you are listening to this directive. And he says, if I find out that you're not, then when you come to talk to me about chassidus or avodas Hashem, you will not be able to gain admission. I will not talk to people of whom I know that they're not keeping this type of davening. This is what he said. He says, when you come to talk to me, the door is going to be closed. That's how important it is. So you see, again, it's a fascinating letter because the Rebbe is so kind of practical at the same time. You got to do it an hour and a half, even if people have to leave early, they're putter, but they don't have the right to impose that on other people because this is our kesher to Hashem. And although it is Torah that gives us the fuel for love and fear of Hashem and Emunah, it is the tefillah that actualizes it, b'payah. Okay, so that's kind of letter number one. And the emphasis of letter number one is on the primacy of Torah and the primacy of tefillah. Now, remember the Gemara in Brachos. The Gemara in Brachos says, and this is not the Baal Shem Tov Chassidim, Chassidim HaRishayim, the early pious generations. It's also Chassidim, but not... They would spend, what, 9 hours a day davening. They would prepare for prayer an hour, they would daven for an hour, and then they would meditate an hour afterwards. They did this for Shacharis, for Mincha, for Maariv. And the Gemara asked the Kasha, people who are spending 9 hours a day davening, how are they going to learn? How much learning can they do? And the Gemara says, that those who were Meiser Nefesh to pray to HaKadosh Baruch Hu were given such a siyata d'shmaya that they could accomplish in a little bit of time what would take other people a lot of time. And now, that's doing 9 hours. And nobody's telling you to do 9 hours. The Elder Rebbe is not saying do 9 hours. But certainly for a person to say, I can't daven slowly because, you know, it's going to cut into my learning. No, that's not the cheshbon. We're not so medayek that way. Now, the problem we have with long davening is really a different problem. It's not the problem that, I mean, the Rebbe is referring to people who have to go to a job or a parnasa, and that was a real issue. Our problem is, for most people, is we don't have a good attention span. Either we can't concentrate, our mind wanders, we get impatient. And, you know, that is an issue. And that's why there was a shita, or there is a shita, that sometimes it's better to daven quickly, in the sense that if you're really concentrating, I mean, every person is different in this way. But sometimes if you're really, really concentrating, you can daven fast and be very sincere in your davening. So, for example, the Gera Rebbe's, the Gera had a mesira of davening very quickly. In fact, even on Rosh Hashanah, which is very long davening, I think Gera finishes everything in 2 hours on Rosh Hashanah. And they have like a 3-hour learning seder, you know, before lunch or something. So that's a different shita. So I don't think there's any definitive answer for this, slow versus fast. The ikkar is kavana, concentration, to mean what you're saying, to focus on what you're saying. For some people, slow is better. For some people, fast is better. You know, that those are different drachim. But the Bala Tanya was of the opinion, apparently, that slow is better. And he says a regular weekday shachris should last at least an hour and a half. Now, I knew a Rav in Baltimore. Actually, he probably got it from this letter, because although he was not a Rav of a Chabad show, he was a Rav of a regular show, but he was an old Chabad shaliach from the Friedrich Rebbe, all the way back, so, you know, from the 1940s. And he had a regular show, you know, some B'nai Tirus, some regular modern Orthodox people. And he wanted to have every Sunday a slow minyan, meaning during the week, they daven the way they daven. On Sunday, he wanted a shachris to last an hour and a half. I didn't realize it until I read this letter, but it probably was mamish based on this letter. And the first week, he had a lot of people, and then he didn't have any people the next week, like, or very few people, meaning it's an avodah, it's not an easy thing to do. But nevertheless, this is what the Alter Rebbe said was absolutely, absolutely required. Now, let me just mention the second letter. Now, the second letter has a subscription before it. It says, Achar Biaso Mi Petterberg. This was a letter that he wrote after his release from his imprisonment in St. Petersburg. This is a letter, again, to his Hasidim. And it talks about gratitude and Hakaras HaTov. But he makes a very interesting point, a beautiful point. And again, sometimes the way he interprets Psukim and Mamari Chazal are absolutely beautiful. He says, if you remember, when Yaakov Avinu comes back after being in Laban's house for 20 years, and he's going to encounter Esav, he hears that Esav is out to get him. So he prays to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he says, Katayti Mikala Chasadim Mikala Emes. Katayti, I am not deserving, I am small from all the kindnesses that you've given me. Meaning I don't deserve any of this. Kiba Makli of Artias Yardin. When I crossed the Yardin to go to Lavan's house, all I had was my staff. And now I come back with wealth and children. And I don't deserve your chesed, Hashem. Katayti. And I acknowledge your chesed. And I ask you to help me, even though I don't deserve it. Right? So the simple understanding of katayti mikala chesedim is simply Yaakov stating, I know, in his modesty, I know I am undeserving of your loving kindness. I don't claim I deserve it. I don't claim it's coming to me. It's all a matnas chinam, and I turn to your mercy. That's the pashat pshat of the pasuk. But the Bala Tanya adds a twist. Chesed is experiencing closeness to God, because we find in Kabbalah, Chesed is the right arm of God. Punishment is the left arm. And Yemino Techavkeni, Shir Shirim, talks about Hashem embracing me with his right arm, which is dominant and strong. So when a person receives the chasadim of Hashem, he is closer to Hashem. The closer you are to Hashem, the more you realize Hashem's greatness. The more you realize Hashem's greatness, the more humble you become. So kataiti mikala chasadim doesn't only mean I am undeserving of all of your kindnesses. It means I realize how small I am because of the kindnesses that make me feel closer to you. Which means, he says, unlike the Russia, who gets chesed, he gets wealth, he gets success, and that makes him arrogant and boastful and prideful. The Midah of Yaakov Avinu is to understand that the closer I get to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the more insignificant I realize that I am. Because I'm looking at HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's why the Lashon is, the famous Lashon, that again is quoted many, many times, both in Nefesh HaChaim and in Tanya, from a passage of the Zohar, Hashem is Mamale Kolam, and Hashem fills all the worlds. Hashem is Sovev Kolalmin, right? He fills the worlds on the inside and he surrounds the worlds on the outside. And it says, Vakula Kamei Deloy Chashiv. Everything in front of him is Kolai, it's like nothing. But underline the word Kamei, in front of him, meaning the more you are in front of God, the more you realize you're nothing. And therefore, the Alter Rebbe said, this Yeshua is not a source of gaiva. It's not a source of arrogance. It's a recognition of how lowly we are compared to the greatness of Hashem. Now, he then says at the end, a fascinating thing, which again, if you don't know the history, you wouldn't know what he's talking about. As I mentioned before, when the Alter Rebbe was in prison, there were many Mishnagdim who saw this as a sign min HaShemayim that he should not teach his Chassidim. When he was free, the Chassidim saw it exactly the opposite. The Alter Rebbe himself saw it the opposite. We won! Now, apparently what happened was there were Chassidim that were mezalzel in the kavod of the Mishnagdish HaGadolim, including the Vilna Gaon. They were saying, you see you're wrong, you see you're ignorant, you see you're no good. They were becoming, the Chassidim were becoming triumphant, as it were. And here's what the Alter Rebbe writes. I'll actually read you these lines. Ulazos basi min amodiyam maidar rabba lichlolos ashe shlomenu. I am coming to inform all the members of our fraternity. It's Anash. There's an abbreviation of Chassidus. Anash. Aleph Nun Shin. Right? A Chassid might say, Anash. Anash is Anshe Shilomeinu. The members of our peaceful union. But they often say the word Anash. I want to be Modia Anash. Al Riba Yachasadim Ashehigdol Hashem Lasos Imanu. On the abundant kindnesses that Hashem has done for us. Lechos b'midaisav shel Yaakov. Take on the midah of Yaakov. Katayti. The more I feel the chasadim of Hashem, the more humble I am. Levilti rum levavam me'acheihem. Not to be arrogant over their brethren. V'lo l'harchiv aleihem peh. Not to make fun of them. Apparently people were doing this. Oh, lishrek aleihem, or to whistle at them. Again, I assume they didn't actually whistle, but that's an expression of derision. Hasmila haskir. God forbid to even mention this. The Ashara Naira, and I am giving you an awful warning about this. Rak lahashpil ruchan. You should lower your spirit in humility. B'midas emes liyakov. Yaakov is connected to truth, and truth and humility are the same, because compared to God, we are nothing. And therefore, take the mid of emes of Yaakov, which is katainti mikol chasadim, mipnei kol adam b'namichas ruach. Approach every person with a lowly and humble spirit. And then he gives two reasons for this, besides the mid of Yaakov Avinu. He quotes a pasuk in Mishlei, Manarach Meshiv Chema. It's a famous pasuk. Manarach, a soft, gentle response, takes away anger. Meaning to say, the Alter Rebbe is being realistic here. He's in a world where there's a lot of fighting. A lot of people are against his approach. There are misnagdim, there are chassidim. If you simply start arguing, oh, we're better than you, look at our Rebbe, got out of prison, whatever it would be, that's just going to create more fire. But if you're humble, if you're modest, if you're gentle, manerach, the soft answer will take away the anger, take away the machlokas. That's how you bring people to the Derech Hashem. By manerach, yoshev chema. And then he brings another pasuk in Mishlei, which he used before in the Tanya, Kemayim haponim el ponim, kein leif ha'adam liyadam. Very beautiful pasuk. As water reflects the face that you show it, so does the heart of man reflect that which it is shown. What does that pasuk mean? I look into a pool of water that reflects my face. If I smile at the water gives me back a smiling face. If I frown at the water gives me back a frowning face. Whatever I show the water is what the water gives back to me. So Shlomo HaMelech says, as water reflects the face that you show it, the heart of another person reflects that which you show it. I show a person kavod, I show a person love, I show a person respect. They will feel that respect and that love for me. I show a person derision, I show a person that they are nothing, that's not going to convince them. They're going to feel that way about me. So the Alter Rebbe is telling his chassidim, if you want to bring people to our derech and avodas Hashem that we consider to be the good derech, you're not going to do so by telling people you're better than them. You're not going to do so by gaiva. You're going to do so by manerach yashuv chema and mayim apanim el panim, by showing them derech eretz, by showing them kavod, by showing them love. So the Alter Rebbe basically says there are three reasons why, in spite of our great victory, in spite of our phenomenal success, in spite of the nisim that Hashem did for us, we must be humble. Number one, the closer you are to Hashem, the more you realize how nothing you are. That's katainti mikol hachasadim. This is the midah of Yaakov Avinu, and Yaakov is called emes because it is emes. Yaakov is the midah of truth. Number two, tactically, manerach yashuv chema, the soft, gentle answer will take away the anger of machlokas. And third is kamayim apanim apanim, kein leifa adam liyadam. Okay, so this is a short letter, and it was written after the release from the imprisonment on the 19th of Kislev. Now, they tell an interesting story. When you get released from prison, I hope you'll never go through, I've never been in prison, but, you know, you have to have somebody that's picking you up, right? Somebody has to pick you up, and you have to arrange ahead of time, right? So apparently it was arranged that a fellow Goldberg was to pick up the Alter Rebbe. Goldberg was a chassid of the Alter Rebbe. So instead, there was another Goldberg who lived near the prison, who they said has to come. And this Goldberg was a very bitter misnaget. But, you know, he's ordered to come to the prison to pick up the Alter Rebbe. So he picks up the Alter Rebbe, and it was a mix-up. And the Alter Rebbe had to spend 4 hours with this Goldberg until the other Goldberg came to pick him up. So during those 4 hours, he had an unrelenting tirade from this Goldberg about why the Alter Rebbe is wrong and mistaken and his derech is destructive. And the Alter Rebbe didn't want to argue with him. But the Alter Rebbe said later that my 4 hours with Goldberg were a lot worse than the time I spent in prison. He said, I was kind of stuck with this guy for 4 hours, which he's just yelling at me and telling me everything I do is wrong, and there's nothing I could even say to him about it. So, but I think the Alter Rebbe maybe also is referring to that. Mane rach yashiv chema, you know, I didn't get into fights with him, and whatever it is. So, Ezra Shem, again, I think these are practical ideas that we can apply in our own relationships with people. You don't convince people by fighting. That's the way it is. It's only when a person feels acknowledged that that opens them up. That's the way it is. In other words, you know, you and I have a machlokas. But if you feel or I feel that you understand what I'm trying to say, then I become open to even modifying, to changing, to being open, etc. On the other hand, if you know you think I'm a total idiot, then I'm going to close up. I'm just not going to reconsider. And that's kamayim upon him, kain leif adam the other. That's part of why in Israel, in particular, religious secular disputes never ever get resolved. Because each side looks at the other side as 100% wrong. It's not that I understand your point, but. That's not the way people talk here. It's not I understand what you're saying. It's you're an idiot, or you're a malek, or whatever it would be. So if each side looks at the other side as totally wrong, totally perverse, totally evil, then no one's ever going to move. So for example, if you take an issue like army, should yeshiva guys be in the army? Okay, so the way it's portrayed is those that say yes say that, oh, if you don't go to the army, you know, you're a parasite. And those that say no say the army is a malek, erev rav. So of course the pro-army people will not accept anything. And then, but there's another way of looking at it, in which I understand that the army is important to the state of Israel. The army is important to our security. We're grateful for what the army does. We appreciate it. But you also have to understand that Israel is a small country. Without Hashem, we will not be successful. And it's Torah and Avodah and Mitzvot that give us Siyata Dishmaya. So instead of being in opposition, we're on the same team. We're both working for the same goal. And the same way that not everybody in the army is in a combat unit, you have people in computers and people, you know, back lines. Okay, there needs to be people who are learning Torah. That brings the Siyata Dishmaya. So instead of creating a situation where one side is totally evil, if you kind of are machshiv the other side, then I think they would be machshiv your side. Whatever your side is. But that's not the way it is in Israel. In Israel, everything is very, very stark. It's an either or, and there's no recognition of any legitimacy on the other side. Memela, Shlomo HaMelech already gave us a prediction. Shlomo HaMelech told us, if that's the way it's going to be, things will never get resolved. And they won't. They won't. Okay, you all have a good week, and everything should take a good elbow.